This recording is a product of Audiobooks Incorporated, Box 16428, Fort Worth, Texas, 76133.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Beter. Today is October 15, 1975, and this is my monthly audio letter number 5. 1 year ago this month, I made my first cassette tape recording for Audiobooks Incorporated. It was entitled, How to Protect Yourself During the Coming Depression and Third World War, and was released as audiobook number 1. Stop and think what has happened since then. It may startle you. In October 1974, our government was still assuring us there was no recession. But the very next month, the government announced that there was a recession underway. And today, a year later, we have already endured what is officially the worst recession since the late 1930s. But we haven't seen anything yet. As I say these words, we are again being fed optimistic lies by Rockefeller agents in our government, from President Ford on down, when we are actually poised on the brink of a far worse economic cliff than the one we fell over a year ago. In this regard, I want to talk to you today about the following 3 topics. Number 1, the CIA, Fort Knox, and the poisoning of America. Number 2, how the Rockefeller brothers are preparing to sacrifice New York City to trigger general economic collapse. And number 3, the continuing buildup to a new United States Constitution and war in Asia. Topic number 1. On September 19, just a few weeks ago, a mini-scandal involving the United States Bureau of the Mint broke nationwide. The Great Penny Caper, in the words of the Wall Street Journal. 2 years ago, the Treasury had 1.5 million experimental aluminum pennies minted, supposedly at the suggestion of Mrs. Mary Brooks, the director of the United States Mint. Samples went to Senate and House Banking Committee members, and a few went to Mrs. Brooks' own office. In the end, the aluminum penny idea was scrapped, and all those million-plus experimental coins were melted down. All, that is, except a dozen or so that seemed to have disappeared in the Senate, the House, and the Bureau of the Mint offices. Since they are potentially worth thousands of dollars as collector's items, the government professes great concern about the situation and may even be forced to mint the low-quality aluminum pennies after all if they can't be recovered. An assistant United States attorney said, quote, "This may just turn out to be the world's worst blunder by the Bureau of the Mint, an egregious case of negligence," unquote. Well, my friends, here is a perfect example of the look-over-their distraction tactics that the Rockefellers always use. They make a big to-do about a few pennies while they cover up the Fort Knox gold scandal. They're playing games with you and me. We have also heard a lot lately about the United States intelligence community, the CIA, the FBI, and so on, and a lot of pros and cons about it. First, there was the CIA whitewash by CIA boss Nelson Rockefeller, with the able assistance of his good friend and Trojan horse, Ronald Reagan, who, by the way, is presently in line to be Nelson's vice president once Gerald Ford is out of the way. More recently, there have been the lurid revelations by the Senate Intelligence Committee, chaired by one Senator Frank Church. Assassination plots against Castro. Poison dart guns to stun guard dogs at enemy installations. All manner of James Bond-style murder weapons. And even deadly shellfish toxins kept by the CIA despite presidential orders to destroy them. Strong stuff, you say? Wrong. The Church Committee, like the Treasury with its pennies, is playing games with you and me again. The United States Senate hearings on shellfish toxins last month did not reveal anything except a tip of the iceberg. The same applies to what they have not told you about assassinations, psychological programming, and other things. As usual, the government is telling you just enough to make you think you have been told the truth, while keeping you in the dark about what really matters. So I'm going to tell you a thing or two about what really goes on in the Rockefeller Brothers espionage network. I believe what I am about to reveal, my friends, is actually mind-boggling. It's tragic. It's frightening. And frankly, it borders on the unbelievable. But my information, which I have carefully double-checked, comes from sources which have been proven absolutely reliable in the past. Therefore, the absolute truth to the very best of my knowledge. And I believe you have a right to know the truth about the things that affect your life, your health, and your destiny. Senator Church's committee made a big publicity splash over the 11 grams, less than half an ounce, of the shellfish toxin kept by the CIA in defiance of presidential orders. But they have known for over a month now about something far worse than those shellfish toxins, something that is a direct, immediate threat to unsuspecting citizens right now. And they are not telling you about it. CIA operatives have stolen from 40 to 60 pounds, pounds, not ounces or grams, of deadly radioactive plutonium-239 from various stations in the United States. Plutonium-239 is the deadliest substance imaginable, and is the material used for nuclear weapons. And these 40 to 60 pounds of stolen plutonium have been processed into an incredibly dangerous, radioactive, super poison, so lethal that 1 gram, 1/28th of an ounce, is enough to kill over 60,000 people. And this insane, illegal poison is now stored in the Central Core Vault at Fort Knox. The Central Core Vault, which was originally designed to house the nation's gold, has been emptied of that gold and turned by the Rockefeller's spy and establishment into a chamber of death containing enough radioactive super poison to kill over one-third of the world's population. Shellfish toxins, my eye. But, my friends, you still haven't heard the worst of it. The clandestine operation involving the plutonium poison was not only insane, but it has been botched as well. This radioactive liquid poison in the Central Core Vault is stored in a number of lead-lined casks that somewhat resemble large milk cans in outer appearance. Most of these were put there as long ago as 1968, even before the last of the gold left Fort Knox. They have not been subject to the safety precautions spelled out for radioactive materials by the former Atomic Energy Commission, and the containers began corroding long ago. Leakage began occurring several years ago as a result, and is steadily accelerating now. The entire United States bullion depository at Fort Knox and its environs are already contaminated with radioactivity, and it is increasing daily. But you may ask, how can these things have happened? How could the gold have been taken out from under the Army's nose? And how could the CIA or anyone else have sneaked this plutonium poison into Fort Knox. Everyone knows Fort Knox is impregnable. End of quote. My friends, the answer is so simple, it may amaze you. First, I must correct one erroneous item contained in my monthly audio letter number 2 for July 1975. It is true that it takes 2 keys and 2 people to open the vaults in the bullion depository, but the commanding general of Fort Knox is not one of them. The 2 people with the keys are the Treasury agent in charge and his deputy, both Treasury officials. Furthermore, control and authority over the depository building and the immediate grounds within the fence surrounding it lies exclusively with the Treasury Department. The United States Army has no authority whatsoever over the bullion depository. The Army never becomes involved in any way with the activities at the depository, except when the Treasury requests Army guard duty for major shipments of gold. What you probably think of as Fort Knox, the famous bullion depository with small grounds and a fence around it, is properly called the United States Bullion Depository at Fort Knox, Kentucky. It is a little Treasury island located geographically within a huge Army reservation that is called Fort Knox. Access to the bullion depository is possible without passing through any Army guard stations and without the Army even having to pay any attention. There is a controlled access divided public highway, US 31W, that runs from Louisville north of Fort Knox south to Elizabethtown, and it runs smack through the middle of the huge Fort Knox military reservation. If you stay on that highway, you can drive all the way through Fort Knox without stopping or being interfered with in any way. But if you take any of the exits onto a crossroad within the Fort Knox reservation, then you will come to a guardhouse within a few hundred feet. Driving north or south along Highway 31W through Fort Knox, you come to a point at which you get a good view of the imposing bullion depository, which sits on a hill perhaps a quarter mile east of the highway. If you take the nearest exit from Highway 31W, you find yourself on a crossroad that goes right past the depository, right up to an Army guardhouse, where you will, of course, be stopped. But about 50 feet before you reach the Army guard, there is a wide driveway that leads into the bullion depository itself. If you turn into that driveway, the Army guard 50 feet down the road will certainly see you, but he need not take any action. Instead, it's up to the Treasury guards to either admit you or keep you out of the depository grounds itself. Thus, the bullion depository at Fort Knox is virtually impregnable for any potential thieves from the outside. The Treasury people at the depository need only squawk once for help, and the Army will be swarming all over the area in moments. But for an inside job, through the Treasury itself, the bullion depository is a sitting duck. Access to the depository is exactly the same as it would be if the depository were located clear outside the Fort Knox military reservation, since no Army checkpoints have to be passed. And inside the fence that surrounds the depository building, everything is strictly up to the Treasury, unless they call upon the Army for assistance. So the Treasury Department had to come to terms, at some level, with the intelligence people responsible for the radioactive plutonium poison. The United States Treasury is now acting as a nuclear banker for the United States intelligence community, which works for the Rockefeller brothers. They wanted to put their deadly valuables in a great big safety deposit box, the Central Core Vault, and the Treasury allowed them to do so. The people who went to Fort Knox last year on September 23, 1974, six congressmen, one senator, and over 100 news media people, were all exposed to this radiation without their knowledge. Far from being warned of this hazard, the very existence of the central core vault was deliberately hidden from the unsuspecting visitors. As a result, every one of those visitors has grounds for a lawsuit against the federal government and against the Treasury officials personally responsible for this terrible trick under the Federal Tort Claims Act. Had I known about the radioactive plutonium poison at that time, I would have publicly warned everyone to stay away. As it is now, all I can do is to suggest that those who visited Fort Knox last year be checked up medically. It is even more urgent than those who work at the depository be checked. I am informed that those who have worked there for a sufficient period of time may already have the beginnings of cancer. Most doctors are unfamiliar with the effects of radiation poisoning, and it can easily be misdiagnosed. Elevated blood sugar, irritability, dizziness, itching, elevated temperature, and a number of other symptoms can result from radiation poisoning. For further information, I refer you to that wonderful book, Are You Radioactive? By Linda Clark. Knowing what we know now, it is obvious why the man who invited the visitors to Fort Knox last year, United States Treasury Secretary William Simon, knew better than to go there himself. It also explains why the government has so steadfastly refused to admit the existence of the Central Core Vault. They dare not open it now, even for a peep show. And on October 9, just last week, if you will recall, President Ford abruptly canceled, yes, canceled, a scheduled trip to Louisville, Kentucky, near Fort Knox. And just 16 hours earlier, I had publicly broken the plutonium poison story in Los Angeles. Before that, our puppet president probably knew nothing about it. But why has the Church Committee of the Senate, which has had information about all of this for over a month, kept it so carefully covered up? Has Senator Frank Church, whose presidential ambitions are well known, found what he considers a better use for this life and death information than to tell the American people about it? Up to now, the main effects of the radioactive contamination seeping out of the central core vault have been confined mostly to the immediate vicinity of the bullion depository itself. But the central core vault was never intended to house radioactive substances. Its walls, ceiling, and floors are made of reinforced concrete several feet thick. But any such concrete structures form thousands of cracks all through it over a period of time, some visible, some microscopic. That makes no difference for gold storage. But for radioactive materials, the concrete structure of the central core vault is like a giant sieve with tiny holes on all sides. Once the radioactive poison gets out of those lead-lined storage tank cans, as it already is doing, a good fraction of it will eventually find its way outside. A major catastrophe, radioactive poisoning of the entire southeast portion of the United States, is now a real possibility unless steps are taken to prevent it. But I am informed that there is no way to neutralize this radioactive poison. All that can be done is to seal it off from the environment. Even if there were some other safe place to take the leaking cans of poison for storage, which there is not, it would not be safe to open the central core vault now, much less enter it. This means that the United States Bullion Depository at Fort Knox must be abandoned forthwith, and a massive tomb of lead and rock built around it to contain the radiation. The contents of the depository, any leftover dregs of gold still there, the stores of curare poison and other drugs and poisons for the intelligence community, Bureau of Engraving plates, important documents, everything has already been subjected to radioactive contamination and are unsafe, so that they might just as well be entombed with the depository itself. Needless to say, a project like this, the abandonment of the bullion depository and the construction of a radiation shielding mound over it, could scarcely be done and kept secret. Thousands of people drive by the depository every day on the public highway, US 31W. And even if that highway were closed, the fate of the bullion depository would necessarily become known if these corrective steps were taken. But that would lead back to the source of the trouble, the Rockefeller brothers themselves, through their intrigues with the CIA, FBI, and the rest of the United States intelligence establishment. The only way the Rockefellers can protect themselves in this hideous thing they have caused is not to do anything, so that no questions will be asked. By the time the spreading effects of the radioactive leakage from Fort Knox can no longer be hidden, they expect to have their dictatorship in place. Then they can do whatever is necessary without worrying about you or I or anybody else. Think about it. Therefore, nothing will be done about the hideous, invisible killer fog slowly creeping outward from Fort Knox unless the public knows about it and demands action. Yet Senator Frank Church contents himself with a public posture of shock at a mere half ounce of shellfish toxin. And even those are not being destroyed. If you will notice, the Church Committee merely voted to suggest to the CIA that its stockpile of shellfish toxin be turned over to scientific agencies for research. That's like saying, if you'd like to, why don't you take the poison flask out of your left hand and put it in your right hand instead? Senator Church has his publicity. The CIA, FBI, and the rest of the Rockefeller spy network still have easy access to their beloved poisons. The public has been given an exciting show and made to think everything is being straightened out. And the real secrets of the Rockefeller brothers end up more secure than ever. If our republic is to survive, this kind of thing has got to stop. In other ways, too, the CIA and its brothers in the United States intelligence industry are knee-deep in things about which you are not being given the slightest hint. The Rockefeller spy and espionage establishment specializes in poisoning minds as well as bodies. I refer especially to the many techniques of psychological programming which they have at their disposal. Even President Nixon, after all, was Watergated out of office through an elaborate CIA plot on Nelson Rockefeller's behalf that pivoted around psychological profiling of Nixon and many of those who surrounded him in the White House. An artificial environment was created at the White House during the Watergate siege with predictable results based on the psychological profiles of Nixon and his aides. After it was all over, you may recall, some of the Nixon people expressed confusion and amazement at what had happened. They could not understand how they had lost their way and become totally divorced from reality. But this is only one aspect of the psychological control exercised on selected individuals by the Rockefellers through their intelligence web. They also have a variety of brainwashing techniques, including highly advanced secret electronic devices. All that is necessary to use certain of these techniques is to get a victim into a hospital. Once he or she is there, It's all over. In this controlled environment, a millivolt system with small electrodes is used to alter the brain wave pattern and inject thoughts and tendencies. As a result, a person can actually be programmed to do things they normally would not. Say, to leak information from a congressional committee doing special investigative work. Or a world leader can be programmed to change his policies. Or the wife of a diplomat can be turned into a spy. Or a world leader can be assassinated by a close relative programmed to do so. Or a true patriot can be programmed to assassinate a political leader or a potential presidential candidate. In all of these cases, the brainwashing techniques permanently damage a person's mind. It is terrible, alien to our way of life. But it is going on right now on behalf of those self-proclaimed philanthropists, the four Rockefeller brothers. I know of specific instances of every one of the programming situations I just gave you, but suffice it to mention only one. Sarah Jane Moore, who took a shot at President Ford in San Francisco on September 22, 1975. Unlike the incident 17 days earlier with Squeaky Fromm, the attempt by Mrs. Moore was real. Had President Ford gone across the street as planned to mingle with the crowd, he would have gone exactly where she stood patiently waiting with her gun, which she had picked out for purchase the previous day with a United States Treasury agent by her side. You may have been baffled by all the accounts of her attempts to get arrested ahead of time and her unsuccessful efforts to stop herself. But she truly could not help herself because she was electronically brainwashed and programmed as an assassin by Rockefeller intelligence agents. Only last night, October 14, 1975, still another odd occurrence happened to President Ford. He was involved in a traffic accident, so-called, as his motorcade drove through downtown Hartford, Connecticut. And for the third time in a row, an apparent brush with possible death by the president was caught beautifully by the TV news cameras, which just happened to be riding in the motorcade this time, three cars behind the president. The limousine President Ford was riding in was supposedly the same one JFK rode in when he was killed, but 90% rebuilt. Due to the accident last night, it will, of course, have to go into the Ford Motor Company shops for repair in Detroit. Will it return to service, outfitted once again as a murder car, as it was that day of November 22, 1963 in Dallas? After all, the Rockefeller brothers have a habit of using any trick that proves successful over and over again.